Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Chris Meany, Ashley Docking here with you as always live from Fantasy Sports Network in Toronto. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Feeling folly today?
Yes.
We got the purple, we got the plaid matching. It's going to be a good show if we're on the same page like this already.
I like the fall.
Got some beer
like
socks
the autumn,
on.
Nice colors.
Can't see
I do
them,
have beer socks on for
Chris
Shane Goss's
some...
beer. We'll talk about him a little bit later on.
Yeah, with Pete Jensen. He's going to come on the show and he's going to talk to us about D-Men. We're going to talk to him twice this week, actually. The Tuesday-Thursday special, we're going to tackle goalies on Thursday. And then Mike Taglieri from Pro Football Focus is talking about fantasy Kijiji. Buy low, sell high.
I
Can
like
someone
that.
Be refurbished? We don't know. We'll find out when we talk to Mike. But first, let's talk about the Monday Nighter yesterday, because there was a lot of fantasy points put up, in particular, by the Falcons' backfield.
But not by the two stars
not
that we were all
studs.
Hoping for. I mean,
yeah.
Julio Jones and Brandon Cooks were just kind of invisible. But let's talk about that Atlanta backfield. It's been so intriguing so far this year. We've talked so much about if you're a Freeman owner, you're probably a little bit upset. Coleman's got upside, but they were both fantastic yesterday. I mean, 207 total yards on 19 touches for Freeman, 152 on the ground. He had a receiving touchdown, 55 receiving yards, and then Coleman at 15 touches, 89 yards for this guy. I mean, just fantastic. Three touchdowns for him. They both look awesome. It's a great situation for the Atlanta Falcons. Maybe not a great situation for Julio Jones right now. He's just a little bit banged up. He didn't do a whole lot there, only the one catch. That is concerning, but man, how bad are the New Orleans Saints?
Their defense is terrible.
Pathetic.
But the thing is, they sold out to make sure that Julio was invisible. Although he did get seven targets, one reception. He had a bit of a tough night. And then it should have helped, actually, the Saints, that Mohamed Sanu went out late in the second quarter with a shoulder injury. It didn't. They still were able to run all over the place. And you know what we always say? There's Sanu's numbers. He was leading the team at the time that he left, three receptions for 31 yards. But you always say you want to avoid a running back by committee. You know what? This might be the one situation, the unique time that it could be beneficial to have either one of them, because although Freeman outsnapped Coleman by 27 snaps, he outsnapped him by 11.
Yeah.
You know, he only got a few more touches, he got a few more receptions, but Freeman's the kind of guy who's going to make his own luck, I guess. He's going to find his way to the end zone. He's going to break for those big runs. Coleman's the guy who's going to get the goal line work, which we knew, but it's equal value. Obviously, Freeman is the better back. I will say that, but Coleman's put in prime opportunity spots.
I kind of think Coleman may be the better back.
Really?
I kind of do.
Wow.
I mean, they both look pretty explosive. They're nice. And I think now, like, if you're a Coleman owner, and I know I own him in a few spots, and it was like the fifth or sixth running back taken off the board for me, and he was just going to be like a guy, if there's an injury, he fills in and he's really nice. And I think now you can, depending on the matchup, you can start him in a flex spot. I know, Ashley, you have D'Angelo Williams and you have Tevin Coleman. That kind of works out for you.
Sure.
Now you can go ahead and you can play Coleman in a flex spot and get some production. But I think the big takeaway for me is that the Saints are just so awful. They're just so bad that you can just pick on them in not only daily fantasy, but you just look at the matchup. You're like, oh, great. I got the Saints coming up.
Yeah.
If that team is going to get up, and you saw, I mean, Freeman got a bunch of carries near the end. He broke one when the game was already out of hand, and that made him get over that 100-yard threshold. So all of this is just good news if you're going to play the Saints. But I just want to touch on just that Atlanta wide receiver core for a second. If Sanu just missed some time, Jacob Tanning's going to get a lot of targets. Yep. Keep an eye on Justin Hardy as just a sneaky little deep league play. I know he didn't get a lot of looks, a lot of catches, but he did found the end zone. He's a decent wide receiver, somebody that's just going to get more reps now. And I thought he was in for a good year, but they ended up signing Sanu in the offseason. But as for Cooks, too, like, don't freak out about
don't
Cooks.
Don't panic at all,
I looked
please.
At the last three games against Atlanta, against Desmond Trufant, 4 for 41, 5 for 22, and then yesterday 2 for 13. It's just a really, really tough matchup for him. But good news for Colby Fleener owners, and keep an eye on Coleman as well. If
Snead
it continues to miss some time with a toe injury, Coleman could be fine, because again, this Saints defense it's awful, and Breeze is great, and just another 300-yard passing game from this guy, so he's going to continue just chucking.
I will say, don't go run and drop someone to get Brandon Coleman unless Snead is going to be out for an extended period of time. Like, let's not panic. He had a great game. He was 7 of 8 for 78 yards. yards, no touchdowns. I just found that a lot of the Saints' offensive players, a lot of key drops when they were making that drive, although Drew Brees was very unclutch through that interception at the end that ended the game for them, they were not helping out their quarterback at all. But
no.
Do not go ahead and drop anyone for Coleman unless he is going to be out. Just pump the brakes.
Yeah,
on that
I don't think you need to use a waiver claim, but I mean, if you're in a deep league, I mean, I think he should be picked up in
you
this work league. In a 14-team league, and
yeah.
I think he should be picked up
and
there.
Drop
I mean,
who?
Fleener, seven
Marquise
targets, Thomas,
Lee?
Seven targets, Coleman, seven targets.
Did you rather have Marquise Lee or Coleman?
I think at this point, rather Coleman. I know that at least Breeze is going to be somewhat accurate and throw these balls.
Okay, let's talk about Rawls quickly. He is out. I feel bad. I was making fun of him on Sunday, saying he's out with a bone contusion, a.k.a. a bruise on his shin, but now they're saying might be a little bit
Take
more serious
back.
In Seattle. He has a fibula injury. We're not sure if that just means a deeper bone bruise. Maybe he has some kind of fracture. We're not sure. Pete Carroll came out and said the injury was obviously worse than they had initially thought. Christine Michael becomes the running back one there. Surefire fantasy value with the Seahawks.
5.2 yards per carry.
He's been awesome.
He's been great.
You're a fan.
Of course I'm a fan.
A few of your guys had big weeks this week. Christine Michael, also Marvin Jones had a big week.
Marvin Jones is just awesome, and he's going to continue to have big weeks. But Christine Michael now has this opportunity. That's what we talked about Ashley on Sunday. It's like now, finally, he's going to get an opportunity with no Rawls to just be the guy. Let's see if he can take the ball and actually run with it. And he did. He was awesome. He was fantastic. So the matchup is he's got a couple of tough matchups ahead. I believe they play the Jets. That's not a great matchup. That's a strong front seven. But again, this guy's just going to have volume. He's going to have touches. And another guy that's going to have volume is going to have touches. We'll skip ahead over Shane Vereen for a second. It's just Jordan Howard. We talked about him on Sunday as well.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and pick this guy up. Jeremy Langford looks like he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with an ankle sprain. That's horrible news. And then Shane Vereen, early reports is that he's going to be out for the year, and now it's just like 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, but that's because they have the opportunity
reports.
To bring him back.
They have the Giants,
Giants literally put on Twitter season-ending surgery, and then they wanted to backtrack because he's on the IR. They could bring him back after 8 weeks if they wanted
and
to.
December.
So I reached out to Will Carroll, our injury expert, just to see if this is something that is a season-ending injury, what a tricep injury can do to a running back, because when you think about the position, you don't necessarily think a tricep injury is going to be such a huge detriment. He said you need to. There's concern with gripping the ball problems, he can't catch himself when he lands on the ground, and also he can't extend to reach for balls that are thrown to him. So just something else to think about when he's making his return and rehabbing.
And that's what Vereen does. He catches balls. He's not one of those guys who's going to run through the tackles. He's a pass catcher. It's a big blow for the Giants. There's a ton of RBs in there. I mean, there's Arlene's Darqua. There's Bobby Rainey
Paul
who
Perkins.
Showed up. Paul Perkins, to me, is the most talented of the bunch.
He's been a
healthy
scratch.
But it doesn't seem like he's going to be that guy who's going to carry the ball in between the tackles. Yeah, because Vereen was so productive. He's going to get back on the football field. I'm not rushing for Bobby Rainey, and I'm not rushing for Arlene's Darqua. You guys, I hope that Rashad Jennings is going to be okay, but he's dealing with an injury, too.
He is.
I think Perkins' upside is tremendous.
Sneaky, sneaky. Thank you, Chris.
Yes.
All right, we're talking buy, sell, you know, repurpose,
high, low,
medium, inside, outside. What can you get for who you have on your roster? Mike Taglieri comes and makes sense of what I just said after this. This is Fantasy Sports Today. It's time to buy low, sell high if you can find someone in your league to do a deal with. So, Pro Football Focus's Mike Taglieri joins us to talk about potential targets or potential guys that you want to just like get out of there before they start on their downward spiral. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Well.
Better now, buddy. We're not going to talk girly, but feel free if you want to just touch on him a little bit. But let's talk about Latavius Murray, because we've been talking about Atlanta's backfield just being confusing. And then last night, if you started both of them, you were just well off. You were fine. But Atlanta has been just giving touches to basically everyone. Jalen Richard is in there. DeAndre Washington as well. And now we have Latavius Murray, who's had a rushing touchdown or at least a touchdown in every single game he's played so far. What do you do with Latavius Murray if you own him?
Well, the idea on Murray is that he's been extremely consistent and that he's, you know, a borderline RB1 on fantasy teams, but that's absolutely not the case. Now is the prime time to sell high on him. Through three games, there's been two, and actually it's been the last two, where he has not topped 48% of the snaps. Just so you guys know how bad that is, that's something that only happened twice all of last year, and one of those games was one where he was hurt. So his snap counts are going down. They're trying to involved. Washington, the rookie there. So just to give you a landscape, an idea of how bad things can get for Murray in a hurry, he's averaging just 13.3 touches per game this year. And going back and looking at last year's data for running backs, there were just four running backs who finished in the top 30 in points per game when they averaged less than 14 touches per game, which is where Murray's at right now. The only players that did that were Deion Lewis, Danny Woodhead, who both catch passes, and then you had David Johnson and Carlos Williams, who both scored an absurd amount of touchdowns. So the pass to run ratio scoring touchdowns for Oakland is going to get back to closer what it was last year. I believe it was 34 passing touchdowns and just 7 rushing. So right now we have a ratio of 5-5. So it's going to start to lean the other way. If you can unload Murray right now for and get RB1 value or even RB2 value, I am all about that.
Yeah, and it's funny because, well, I think that's why we liked him heading into the season, is that he was like top 10, top 5 in touches and carries. And then Jack Del Rio said, don't worry, I mean, he may even get more than that. And now he's been very vocal in saying, you know, as you said, Mike, just the splits and the carries and the touches and just the snaps, pretty even.
And now we know Jack Del Rio's a liar. He's a liar. He can't be trusted, just like that backfield over there. Mike, I have to ask you, is your shirt laced with LED lights? Because you look like this amazing, like, Christmas light bulb right now.
No, it's going
on and off.
It's got holes inside the lettering on there, so it kind of looks, it might look like that, but it's kind of cool, though, that you say that. Now that I see it in the reflection, yeah, it's kind of neat.
I thought, like, my eye was twitching from stress or something when I'm, like, talking to you. Anyways, we'll move on. We'll talk about Emmanuel Sanders. The first 2 weeks, 8 catches, 88 yards. This week, 13 targets, 9 receptions, 117 yards, 2 touchdowns. However, in the first 3 weeks, there's been only 6 receivers that have had over 13 targets in a game this season. So it's not something that happens every day. It's probably not likely that it happens to Sanders that often, considering he's second to Demaryius Thomas. So is this another sell high candidate?
Now, this is an issue with the Broncos as a whole. I'm selling Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. The issue with Sanders is that his public perception value may not be as high as it needs to be to sell high yet. But Demaryius Thomas is one you probably could sell high on based on name recognition alone. Because what a lot of people do is they go back and they just look through the box scores and they see these things. But, I mean, even though Emmanuel Sanders may be the number one wide receiver in Denver, because he does have more targets, he's out-targeted Demaryius Thomas in every single game. But the production, you know, he's had 49 yards or less in 2 of them, and then he explodes this week. That's the problem with him. He's going to be extremely volatile. The targets are nice to have. He's only catching about 55% of his passes, whereas Demaryius Thomas has caught 80. Mm-hmm. So I'm worried about Demaryius Thomas, too. After looking more and more at the situation, I'd probably rather sell Demaryius Thomas because of the value you can get in a trade for him, just because Demaryius Thomas may have hit his ceiling, considering he's caught 80% of passes. He's being out-targeted by Sanders on a weekly basis. He only had 5 catches for 45 yards this week until he caught one bomb in the fourth quarter that went for a 55-yard touchdown. So his production is going to be sporadic, too. I'm selling all Broncos wide receivers. I'm not buying Trevor Siemian as a 4 touchdown guy every single week. That's just not going to happen. So I'm selling both Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, though I'm not just giving away Emmanuel Sanders.
There's been some concern right here in the office about Odell Beckham Jr. And I said the other day, we have a live show on Sunday and it was week 2. I was just a little concerned that maybe the touchdowns weren't going to be there this year. I'm not concerned that he's going to continue to get targets and yards, and I'm sure the touchdowns are going to come. But I mean, 25 in like his first 27 games, just a touchdown monster. But now they got this guy in Sterling Shepard who's just kind of taken away from him a little bit. Are you concerned at all, Odell Beckham Jr., if you're an owner of his?
You know what's crazy is that I had lunch with Mike Clay from ESPN and Tristan Cockcroft from ESPN right before the season started, and I said, am I the only person that worries about Odell Beckham's ceiling now that Sterling Shepard is there? And they both kind of laughed at me and said, yeah, you're Mike, you're the only one. And, you know, it's kind of rearing its ugly head. But the thing is with Beckham, I'm still buying because the talent's still there. He sits there, I think it's number 8 in yards for wide receivers. The problem has been the slot usage. okay? Now, going back and looking at his first 2 years in the league, the Giants used him in the slot 20 to 28% of the time, depending on which season. So seeing his number this year at just 8%, that's where the issue lies, because Odell Beckham creates mismatches over the middle of the field. He averaged over 3 yards per route run from the slot in both 2014 and 2015. Sterling Shepard is seeing that success this year, but I do believe that the Giants are starting to realize they need to get Beckham there. That's where he succeeds, and that's where Eli Manning ultimately succeeds too. So this week against the Redskins, they used him there about 12.5% of the time. So that number is slowly rising, and I do believe touchdowns have a massive effect on the perception of a player. And if Odell Beckham has scored just one touchdown in the first 3 weeks, then he would be fantasy's number 8 wide receiver instead of number 18. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair.
So you want to buy him, but who's going to sell him? What do you offer? Because there's all the time there's sandbag offers in fantasy. So what do you think is a fair offer at this point that could entice someone to get rid of Odell Beckham Jr.?
Well, that's the thing, is like you have to figure out, and I know there's some people out there being like, yeah, everybody knows you want to buy low on Odell Beckham, but that's the art of trading, is that yes, you want to buy low because his stock is lower than it was 3 weeks ago. There's no way that you were going to get anything less than Odell Beckham for like a Julio Jones or an Antonio Brown. Right now, you could probably get Odell Beckham Jr. for Mike Evans. And me personally, even though I'm an Evans fan, I would take Beckham over Evans. I'd be selling high and buying low. I'd do a package deal. And a lot of people, you know, a 2-for-1, what it does is it not only creates a roster spot where you can grab somebody like, you know, Dwayne Washington off waivers, but you're also getting the best player in the deal most of the time. So for me, if you could package two guys, you know, say like a, without going through the names, I mean, you could probably do Latavius Murray and, you know, a tier 2 wide receiver, put them together and get an Odell Beckham Jr. You probably can do that because people are starting to get a little bit worried about his production.
Fair enough. Mike, we got to get out of here. We don't really have any time to get into this, but who are you most worried about? Alshon Jeffery, Randall Cobb, or Golden Tate?
It would be Golden Tate. I said going into the year that I was worried about Anquan Boldin signing. He eats up those targets over the middle of the field that Tate was getting last year. Theo Riddick's going to eat into that. That Marvin Jones, I actually said before the season, so it's not just like a right now thing, that Marvin Jones was the only wide receiver on this team that had a clear-cut role in the offense, and it's showing its head.
Yeah, it is. All right. Thank you so much, Mike. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the football this week. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, anytime.
Well, Pete Jensen from NHL.com has a clear-cut role on our show, and that's to break down his rankings coming up next. Top defensive rankings for the 2016-2017 NHL season. This is Fantasy Sports Today, NHL.com's Pete Jensen has been joining us for the last few weeks to get you prepared for your NHL fantasy season. So we're going to bring him back. Of course, we haven't talked about defensemen yet. Hey, Pete, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure. Good to see you.
Yes, great to see you. Let's talk about your top 10. Ashley wants to talk about Brett Burns. But number 1, you got Erik Karlsson in there. Brett Burns at number 2. PK Subban at number 3. Chris Letang. Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Dustin Byfuglien. Roman Josi. Drew Doughty. Shane Gostisbehere. And John Carlson to rank out your top 10. There's been just a little bit of debate in the office, depending on what league, you know, your settings, your format, that Brett Burns was really the number 1 defenseman in fantasy hockey last season.
And in some instances, a top 5 player at all.
Yes.
No matter what the position, this guy had 353 shots on goal. The Sharks have a top power play. They've had it for years. But I want to know, how come then, based on all of this information, why you have him second to Erik Karlsson?
Well, in a standard league, you look at what Erik Karlsson did last season. He took his own offensive productivity to a new level. 82 points in 82 games. We haven't seen that in the NHL in over 10 seasons. So it's rare point production from Erik Karlsson, puts him at a slight advantage. If you're going with a hits league, though, Brent Burns has that slight edge because he really provides rare coverage in points, power play points, and shots on goal. As you mentioned, he was second in the league to only Ovechkin, and Brent Burns just really turned into a different. I know he looks like a beast. He's a scary looking dude, but he's an intimidating one on the ice. But he was really some sort of a fantasy fantasy beast last season with how he took that shots on goal production up a notch. So in a hits league, go with Burns, and in a points only league or a standard league, go with Carlson. But I would honestly take those guys 5 and 6 in a standard Yahoo league.
Yeah,
I think they're right up there with the best forwards.
So is that your strategy? Is that how it lies? I mean, we could touch on PK Subban too. A disappointing season from him. He just in Montreal in general, he got hurt down the stretch, didn't play, only a handful of goals. We weren't used to seeing that from PK. Obviously dealt to Nashville for Shea Weber, who we'll touch on in a little bit. But well, how does your strategy lie when you're picking defensemen? Because for the most times, I mean, Carlson will go in the first round, Burns will go early second, PK is just shortly after him. How does your strategy lie with defensemen?
I mean, forward positions are so much deeper than defensemen, and I'm really defenseman has grown on me so much, especially this past year. You look at Letang, how good he was under Mike Sullivan. He was top 5 in the NHL in points. There were 4 guys last season among the top 15 overall players. Then you also look at someone like Ekman Larson, who's right up there, especially in keeper leagues with the Coyotes improving. So I think in the top, say, top 6 rounds, you have to get two defensemen at this point. If you want to wait a little bit longer, you could still get high upside guys like Yandel or Ristolainen a little bit later, but I really am a big advocate of getting defensemen early, especially Chris Letang, who in some leagues is dropping to the 3rd or 4th round.
How do you think PK does in Nashville? Do you think he's just the same defenseman? Do you think maybe Nashville, Peter Laviolette, will just let him buck and let him do his own thing?
I think you really have to consider the motivation this guy is going to have, because he has been slighted this summer, not only by his team, the Montreal Canadiens, who traded him away after a collapse, but also by Team Canada, who left him off the roster even when they had to make a replacement. So I think his motivation is going to be key. You can make the argument that he's going to be going to a tougher division, and that's fair, but I think the system he's joining, and especially the top power play unit with Roman Josi, who had 60-plus points last season, I think they both have a chance if they stay healthy. Even if they play separate from each other at even strength, the damage that those two could do on the power play could be enormous. So I really like Subban, even ahead of Chris Letang, just because of in standard leagues, he's provided some excellent category coverage in the past. Remember a couple of years ago, we were always debating between Carlson and Subban for top overall D, and Subban also has the most power play points in the NHL among defensemen since 2012-13, and that was for a less than stellar Montreal power play unit many of those years.
While making his debut in the top 10, Shane Gostisbehere, 9 yeah. overall, playing for the Flyers, 44 points in 62 games last season. Ooh. And he didn't even join. Yeah, he 62 yeah. games only. He was in yeah. the minors for the first month and a little bit. So are you expecting him just to take that next step forward? That's why you have him ranked so high?
He could. I mean, I'm a little concerned to take him among the top 50, but outside the top 50, the potential is extremely clear for Gostisbehere. Like we were talking about with Burns, he's on a great power play unit in Philly with Voracek, Claude Giroux, who has the most points in the league since 2010-11. You also have Simmons and Braden Schenn on that unit. So, and it seems like he has that spot locked down. He has surpassed Mark Streit as the main man, offensively speaking, on the blue line for the Flyers. So I really like Gostisbehere a lot. He is young and is, you know, potentially headed toward a maybe some sophomore regression if defenses become more in tune with how to stop him or contain him. But I still think he has an enormous ceiling if he plays a full season at anything close to the point production that he showed last year.
Pete, unfortunately, you only have about 30 seconds left. Is number 16 in your defenseman rankings, Shea Weber, coming off a season where he was 4th in goals with 20, the most power play goals in 14. You see there your 11 to 20 rankings. One of 22 defensemen to have 100-plus shots, hits, and blocks. Do you think he's in for a little bit of a decrease in his season going to Montreal?
I would take him a little higher than where I had him on that list if it's a hits and blocks league, because I think he's still very valuable, usually getting over 150 in each. But standard leagues, you look at a number of categories he regressed in last season. And to be honest, I think his points and especially power play points will regress this season, going from Josi as his defensive pair to Andrei Markov, who's still serviceable, but nowhere near the same caliber of puck mover. So Montreal's power play is going to change a lot.
We gotta go, Pete.
We gotta Ryan, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Sorry.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Bye.